Welcome, everybody, to another Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Maddie Lee, joined in the Thunder podcast studios.
Why sure. not?
The Oklahoman podcast studios after the Thunder's 109-106 win over the Chicago Bulls. Guys, we had another insanely close game.
Yeah, we just had that crazy Minnesota game, and this one was crazy in a different way. I mean, the Thunder got down by 26 points and tied for the best comeback in franchise in Thunder history, which was crazy.
Yeah. My first game I'm covering this year, I'm going to take full credit and blame for what we saw tonight. Blame for a abysmal first half. It was rough. There were moments I thought, okay, I'm going to come to the Thunder for the first time and get to write about how bad they stink.
Right, because a little inside basketball, Jenny was planning from, like, loose plan, hey, maybe I'll come and write about Chris Paul. And Jenny, how many points did he have at halftime?
He had two. He had more turnovers than points. It was, listen, everybody was bad in the first half, Chris Paul included. It was a... Joe, and you wrote, both of you wrote some about this, but the fact that the Bulls play a defensive style that isn't exactly normal or used a bunch in the NBA, yeah. Guys saying they knew what they were going to face, but it took a minute to get it figured out, and it put them in a 26-point hole. It was really ugly. I mean, I'm glad they figured it out, but boy, while it was getting figured out, it was pretty abysmal to watch.
Yeah, the Bulls scored 26 points off turnovers in the first half, off of 14 turnovers. So, A, shooting really efficiently once they got possession, and B, God, they were getting steals left and right, and most of them were them just, like, jumping the lane and picking off a pass, and then... They have such quick guards. Like, LaVine is already so hard to stop, and then get him out in transition, and it's darn near impossible.
Yeah, I mean, at the 8-minute mark in the second quarter, it was 50-25, and the Bulls had 26 points off turnovers. The Thunder had 25 total points. So that told the story of the first half. And, but, you know, you looked at the box score at halftime, and the Thunder's still down really big. And a comeback does not seem likely. But, like, the Thunder shot the ball okay in the first half. You're just like, if they don't turn the ball over, they're probably in this thing.
Well, and that was sort of what I was, you know, there were so many turnovers, it was hard to see silver linings. But I think Joe's right, because you think, well, if they only give up half of those possessions, if they only turn it over 7 times or 10 times, I mean, they might not be ahead, but they were shooting well enough that you thought, okay, this is if they can get the turnover stopped, but it seemed so unlikely for so long in that game. You just thought, you know, everybody knows that no NBA game is over at halftime. Everybody knows that. But you just saw so many problems with the Thunder figuring it out. It just seemed like there's no way that the Bulls are not going to, you know, continue to get, because they were getting good shots too. That was the other thing. They were getting. They were getting shots out of that defense, that, you know, transition buckets, easy stuff. And then they were playing pretty well in the half court, too. So you thought, okay, even if the Thunder gets this turnover thing figured out, they're still going to have to be better defensively. Mm-hmm. You know, they're still going to have to get some other stuff going their way. It seemed like a big hill. It was a big hill. Let's not try to undersell. They came back from a massive, massive deficit.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, not one where it was like, oh, everyone's shooting poorly. If they all, you know, cut down on the turnovers and shoot better, they'll be fine. Like Danilo Gallinari, who has had a stretch of rough games on the road, came out and was shooting well from three. And so you're getting production from him. You're getting production from Terrence Ferguson, who came back from that right hip soreness that has had him out for 5 games. And he looks so fresh for not have played in 5 whole games, not on that whole West road trip, not coast, but West road trip. Yeah. And so you're getting production out of guys and who are able to space the floor. And you just think, like, oh, man, what in the world could they turn around enough to dig themselves out of this 26-point hole. And it turns out, if they just do the same thing to the Bulls as the Bulls were doing to them in the first half, even if they keep turning the ball over, they're able to come back.
Yeah, Chris Paul said at halftime the message was stop turning the ball over. Like, it wasn't a complex message, but he admitted, you know, he was uncomfortable in the first half. He had three or four turnovers and wasn't playing well. And he's seen just about every defense any NBA team can throw at you. And the Bulls were still, you know, causing the Thunder issues. And then, but it helps to have a guy like Chris Paul lead your offense, because he had a classic Chris Paul second half. That third and fourth quarter, he carried the Thunder. And we saw one of his best performances, maybe probably the best, in a Thunder uniform.
Yeah, I think so. You know, he was Billy Donovan spoke to this, and almost simultaneously Chris Paul was in the locker room after the game saying something very similar about the fact that, you know, when you've been in basketball for as long as he has, and, you know, really good players tend to be able to have a sense of just how long the game is. The fact that, yes, you're in a big hole, but you've got this amount of time, and if you really continue to, you know, take little bites, you can get back. And so sort of that internal clock, I think, is what Billy Donovan said. And Chris Paul said, you know, something to the same effect that, you know, the game is long, you keep talking, you keep working, and you can get it together. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was very much a mental thing that they had to get figured out. And Chris Paul's the type of player that, you know, I'm not sure sheer will of force would have gotten them back in that game. You know, they really had to think through, what do we do to attack this Bulls defense? What do we do to turn them over? And they did that. And, you know, maybe it could have been done a different way, but I thought that was pretty important to what the Thunder put together.
Have they solved the third quarter problems? Just get down by enough in the first half and they'll have to play well in the third quarter.
33-22 in the third quarter, that's a big step in the right direction for them.
I mean, Billy mentions this all the time, but like they're playing from behind in almost every game, and like, you know, they haven't won them all, but this is just another where it's like, gosh, this I mean, every now and then they were blown out at Indiana, at Portland. This had all the makings of a blowout, and they still managed to come back.
Yeah, at halftime, we were ranking it among the worst losses of the season, and it turned out to be a win. I mean, so many of those big moments where the Thunder was getting out in transition and able to push the pace and set their own pace in this game had to do with Chris Paul, either on the stealing end or the finishing end, or in some cases both, where, I mean, not even that he'd go coast to coast, he'd like poke it out and then come around and be able to score.
Yeah.
He was just so in control in the second half and not panicking in a game where I think it would be easy to panic.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was looking at in the third quarter, because everybody will obviously talk about the fourth quarter, 19 points for Chris Paul, and, you know, really a magnificent – is that right, 19? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
I'll double check.
I wrote it, but that's been like an hour ago, so I forgot. But, you know, that's obviously going to be what we talk about. But there were stretches through the third quarter where they had to get some momentum built. At one point, about 3 minutes into the third quarter, they're down 21. It's 75-54. I mean, that's a big hole right there. Then Chris Paul assists on a Steven Adams basket. They give up an and one on the other end. Then Dennis Schroeder drives, scores. Then you see Adams drive and score on the next Thunder possession after getting a defensive rebound and a Chris Paul steal. And then after the Chris Paul steal, Paul scores on the offensive end on an assist from Adams. So, again, not sort of the threes. We saw the threes in bunches from Paul in the fourth quarter. But that's the kind of stretch that you've got to have a little string here and there. If you're going to come back from 21 down, you got to get from 21. That got him to 16 down, to 78-62. You got to start to kind of get back towards those middle teens and then the lower teens, and have those little, you know, 90-second to 120-second stretches where you're cutting into it. I told you guys after the game, all through the third quarter, I kept thinking, I need to start writing. But I kept coming back to, they keep kind of getting closer and closer. You know, go from 20, then it's 18, then I might go back up. And it's, you know, they kept kind of figuring out, and I kept thinking, I don't think they're quite done yet. And then obviously that finishing stretch of the third quarter where Chris Paul gets that little jumper in the lane after Schroeder gets the steal on the inbounds pass, you know, I think was really indicative of the way that they were heading.
Absolutely. And then right after they scored two buckets in really quick succession. They had that, and then they played really good defense on the other end. And it wasn't technically a turnover, but you had Schroeder playing really good defense, getting really big, and forcing a weird shot that essentially went straight up in the air, and Chris Paul just grabbed it, and suddenly Nerlens Noel is on the other end of the floor getting fouled and going to the line. And so that was like a very quick swing, and suddenly you're like, oh my God. Like, that was the moment when I was like, I gotta start writing a winning lead.
We have to adjust.
Yeah, because at that point you go to the fourth quarter and it's an 8-point game, and an 8-point game in the NBA is anybody's game.
Yeah.
Whereas before, it was not anybody's game.
Right. Then you start writing two different gamers. I had my one leading with a Zach LaVine steal, a Zach LaVine coast-to-coast, and another leading with, honestly, those two plays, and then I ended up changing it in the end. which, hey, let's talk about that play to a moment in, again, a Chris Paul moment in that fourth quarter where Thunder got the steal, Chris Paul hits a three, and as soon as, not even before Chris Paul, or not even when Chris Paul was taking the shot, before, like during the turnover, as the Thunder gained possession, Boylan just puts both hands on top of his head and just looks so frustrated, and you're like, they've done it. I think they already had a bit of a lead, but they extended their lead
to four. That was 104-100. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the gut punch where you're like, oh,
they're gonna win
this.
Yeah.
I thought that, you know, that third quarter that you talked about, it was kind of like a, you know, they were chipping away, but it wasn't that flashy. Yeah. But they got it to the point where in the fourth, you could have all the flash, and that came in those, you know, Chris Paul steals, the Chris Paul threes. I mean, it seemed like the whole crowd was just like holding their breath every time he shot the ball, and he got, you know, matched up against bigs, and that's where he just worked so well. Mm-hmm. And like those threes, it's not like they bounced a couple times and went in. They were all pretty pure.
Yeah.
Fact checked.
Go ahead.
Indeed, 19 points for Chris Paul in the fourth.
Whew, all right. You know, Joe, you mentioned the flash of Chris Paul in the fourth quarter. I didn't think that he forced any of them.
Yeah.
I mean, none of them looked like
no heat checks, really. Like, no. It was all in the offense, I thought.
Yeah. No, I agree. There was one that I think the one he hit to give him the lead, he kind of stepped into. And that was the one that I thought, when he let it go, I thought, eh, and it went in.
Right, you can't complain much about that point.
But I do. That was like the one I thought, well, I don't know, as he's shooting it. But he stepped into it. That was gave the Thunder a 101-100 lead, 4:07 left in the game. You know, that was clearly, he felt good at that point. That was his fifth make out of five. The fourth make out of five. He makes another three on the play Matty referenced earlier after he taps it away from Wendell Carter after a rebound, and then he hits a three a few seconds later. So, you know, just an amazing flurry by Chris Paul, but again, not sort of a, he took a stranglehold on the game, but not in a, it was such a smooth way he did it. You know, it's just, it's so interesting to see, you know, different superstars we've been able to see here over the years and how they have dictated the game differently. Paul George did it different than Russell Westbrook did it different than Chris Paul, but they're still able to really, you know, put the squeeze on people. It was really interesting to watch tonight as that all came together.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, that's a great point, because if this was Russell Westbrook and Chris Paul's place, and like around the same cast of characters, say they did come back, the comeback would have looked totally different. Yeah. Like, it would have looked nothing like it did tonight with him making those threes and setting guys up. Like, it is interesting to see the different way that different stars play.
Yeah,
not to set a value judgment on either way. But, yeah, you'd see Russell Westbrook really – I mean, we talked about pushing the pace, but it wasn't like they were getting out on the break at the same rate as a Russell – led game. Like, if Russell Westbrook had been leading that team, they'd be getting out on the break constantly. He'd just be slicing and dicing and kicking out to the corners and you know, probably heaving a couple bad threes, but like would be making up for it in so many other ways.
Well, you know, and you just think about the way, what Joe just said made me think about it would have felt and looked so much different, not only in how they would have done it, but how, I mean, if you watch Chris Paul, about the most excited he got, I think he slapped Dennis Schroeder 5 at one point after a made 3. And that was like it. Everybody knows if it's Russell, it's the mm-hmm. it's the roars, it's the stomping around, it's the chest out, you know. And that's him, and that's not bad, but it just was so different that, you know, since I had decided by the time we got to that point that I was going to write about Chris, I was looking for, you know, the lead.
The moment,
You want that moment to, like, encapsulate. And there was nothing because he doesn't do that sort of stuff.
Right.
I was
directs it right to officials.
Yeah, exactly. All of his emotion goes to the guys in gray. But it was a different feel, Joe. You said it right.
Yeah. And he said in the locker room, you know, he brings this up so many times of, I've been playing this game a long time and like seen a lot of things, but he said tonight that
which sounds very similar to Russell.
Yeah.
Comparisons.
The similarities, yeah. But he said it was good, you know, even though that was a very successful road trip, they just came back on splitting those four games. But he said that sometimes young guys can get down on themselves a little bit and like sort of like have no hope in a game like this. And he kind of said that this was a lesson in that and guarding against it. And like, crazy things happen in the NBA. Like you said, like, no game is over at halftime.
Yeah. And I mean, we just illustrated the big comeback, but it wasn't like, oh, from that Chris Paul 3, they were leading for the rest of the game. They had to stay so focused even through the last seconds. And we've seen, you know, obviously when you're in those high pressure situations, not everything is going to go right for you. And tonight, they did. So they take that 104-100 lead. They expand on it a little, but then the Bulls tie it right back up at 106-106 with 25 seconds left. And the rest is kind of just free throws.
Yeah,
and
you had the banked free throw heard around the world.
The best part about that, I wish I could fit that in my gamer, because the best part is just everyone that you can hear like cheering is essentially just like gleefully laughing at like, oh my gosh, Steven Adams just banked in.
He missed it so bad that he made it.
Yeah. He banked in a free throw and made it. And Steven afterwards was asked, because he missed the second one, which honestly, situationally, perfect, because they had 4 seconds left. You're able to wind down the clock a little bit. Worked out great, but someone asked him about if he had meant to miss it, and he laughed and essentially said no. But he said, if you can count on me to do one thing, it's miss free throws.
Yeah, but he taps it back, and it ends up in Chris Paul's hands, and then, you know, Paul is able to step to the line. You know, and I'm reading off my notes here, but after LaVine made that, he made it with a little, I think it was about 26 seconds, because there was seconds discrepancy on the shot clock. So the Thunder, I mean, obviously they were going to have to shoot, but they were also going to have to play defense, was the likely scenario. They were going to have to make something to go up, and then they were going to have to keep the Bulls from scoring. The tap back worked great because it reduced it to 1.3 when Paul got to the line. But Chris Paul drove and got tied up. He fell. He was on the ground grabs the ball, holds on, calls a timeout. So
that was incredible. Super underrated. I don't know how he didn't travel.
Yeah. I don't either. In fact, I think he might have.
He might have.
I was as far away from the play as anybody. I was not on the floor, so I can't say with certainty that he did or he didn't. But I know when he went down, he had to hold on to it and call timeout. And I thought he moved.
He slid a good ways across the floor, and I don't know at what point he called timeout because at a bad angle, there were guys in my way, but yeah. Definitely saw him sliding. And so when they called, when the whistle blew, I was like, oh, that's travel. Definitely a travel. Yeah. And then
timeout.
I was like, yeah. Oh.
Yeah, underrated Chris Paul moment right there, I thought.
Yeah, and just to that point, whether they call it or not, like, it seems like both staffs did not like the whistles tonight either way. Like, I mean, there was a
coaches
lot of
challenges.
Arguments. There was challenges. There was flagrant foul. I mean, it was a lot of reviews, too. I mean, it was kind of a choppy game at certain points.
Yeah, at one point, it sounded like Boylan was saying, don't like, take over the game right now to the referees.
Let him play.
Yeah.
You know, I know that I know a lot of this season is about future seasons. And guys, the Thunder right now sits here 12 and 14. By Christmas, they could be over 500.
Yeah, tied for seventh in the West.
I don't think we thought that was going to happen.
No.
So I what I'm about to say, I say with the knowledge of that. I mean, this is a team that could make the playoffs. So let's not lose sight of that. But I think as we talk about tonight, as we talk about what Chris Paul did, as we talk about what this team did, this was one of those learning experiences that you take forward, that, you know, there are ways to come back and to figure it out and to analyze as the game goes on and to make smarter choices. And Chris Paul, and he wasn't the only one. I'm not just saying he's it, but to have a guy that is what he's done and what he continues to do, that is a great tool. And that's, I wrote about him and his influence here and now, but also on the long term. He's teaching these guys lessons that are going to carry over after he's gone, whether that's this season or later or whenever. He's not going to be in Oklahoma City forever. He's at the end of his career regardless. But if he's here for the rest of the season or not, I think there are some invaluable lessons that he is passing on to teammates who saw how to win through Russell Westbrook, through Paul George, and now Chris Paul, and each of them have valuable lessons to pass on.
Absolutely. I mean, it's now officially trade season since we're past December 15th, so why not talk about trades? The Thunder's not going to make a trade just for the sake of making a trade. We saw them be, you know, patient on this Chris Paul, on getting, you know, sending Chris Paul off already this summer. And like you said, he's imparting wisdom on young players. He's been huge in developing, especially Shea and Darius Bazley. And so forcing a trade, not in the Thunder's best interest, but if they can get back a good package for him, obviously they're not going to say no. Like, getting that massive contract off their books is not a bad thing. But neither is keeping him, because, like you said, he is molding these young guys. He is making a positive impact on this team. And so with the Thunder really having the long view for the next several seasons, because this is going to be a long process for them to get back into playoff and championship contention, it makes sense to do what's best for the long term, whether that's keeping Chris Paul or trading him.
Yeah. I mean, like, a true rebuild isn't going to start until Chris Paul is moved, and that could be this season, it could be next season, it could be two seasons from now, but, like, we've talked about this a ton. Like, they have enough solid young pieces, and Chris Paul, he's not going to be as good now, as good when he's 37 as he is now, but, like, if you keep him around, you're going to have, like, a competitive team, and he showed that tonight. But, you know, like you said, they're waiting for their ideal. It's not going to be spur of the moment. It's probably going to be a while for him. And as far as, like, looking toward that next era, like, I think we're probably still waiting on that until he's eventually moved.
Yeah.
Reposition, replenish, rebuild.
Yeah. I don't think, I mean, I don't think we're anywhere
just
close.
Spewing Presti.
I don't think we're anywhere close to whatever the bottom of the bell curve
oh,
is.
Oh, yeah. No. It's going to get
worse.
Now, there were moments tonight in the first half when I thought, oh, this is what that looks like.
Yeah.
Get used to this.
Ooh, let's all.
Like this without Gallinari, Paul.
Yeah,
who knows, whoever. Schroeder. So.
Yeah, that was a sobering hour and a half right there. I was like, oh, Lord. Yeah.
This well, is- we kind of saw that in the preseason when
those guys sat
he
out.
Was out because yeah. It was like, yeah, there wasn't that resetting moment. It kind of just kept snowballing. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we'll see.
It made me wonder, like, what it was like, what it would have been like to cover, like, the Hinkie era 76ers when they were winning, like, 12 games.
Oh,
and, like,
gosh.
Even, like, the Knicks who won, like, I think 17 games last year. I mean, this team is far from that. I
far
mean,
better.
It could get to that level at some point, but not well, close yet.
I don't know if I've told you guys this, but before the season started, I was listening to, I think it was one of those ESPN, like E60, they put what they've got on TV on the radio, because I wasn't watching TV, so I don't know what this was. But they were doing a piece on Brett Brown, the Sixers coach, who was there during the tank, during the Hinkie trust the process, but he's still there now, which is rare to have a coach there for the 10 or 12 wins
right.
And there for the 60 wins. So they were talking about that, but as they were talking about their tank years, and you know, we hadn't seen this team yet. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, what if we're in for 15 wins or 18 wins? I mean, the first Thunder season here was rough,
mm-hmm.
And it was, what, 24, I think, or whatever? And I just, I was thinking, oh my gosh. Because at that point, we didn't know, is Gallinari going to get traded? Is Chris Paul going to get traded? Are these guys going to be here for a minute, here for not at all? Like, there was just no, and I just remember having that thought of like, oh goodness, what are we, and we, like Joe said, there may still come a day when 12 or 15 wins is what is the reality in Oklahoma City.
Sure.
I mean, that is a possibility, but it's not this team right now. And so it's really going to be interesting to see how this season plays out, what pieces remain after the trade deadline in February, because, yeah, I don't think there's a rush to do a deal. I think the Thunder realizes they've got some pieces that could be valuable to other teams, and so
yeah.
Why?
I think the only rush is Gallinari, because he's the only one out of those we're mentioning who's not under contract next year, and
right.
You don't want him to walk for nothing.
Well, I mean, the other option, though, then this summer would be to do a sign-and-trade.
Right.
You have to work with him to pull that off,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's not like if they reach, you know, the trade deadline and haven't moved him, that they absolutely won't get anything. Obviously, it's possible,
mm-hmm.
But there are other options where, you know, where they won't necessarily come out empty-handed from such a great player.
Right. Just a little riskier.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, then you're moving. I mean, you have more moving pieces and other people working together, but not a entirely hopeless. And the other piece of hope for Thunder fans when we're talking about potentially 15 win seasons is
yeah, sorry to be a downer after a great game, but
is the change of the lottery system. So they don't have to win only 15 games to potentially get a number one pick. We saw, you know, that go all over the place. Poor Knicks got screwed over by losing big and
ping pong balls
and and then not winning big in the lottery. So
yeah, anything's possible there. And you know, I mean, as we sit here, Sam Presti could be doing some blockbuster deal for any of these guys.
We're about
talking
to get an alert on our phone.
Oh my gosh!
I mean, that's the reality of the situation. It could happen at any time, but until further notice, I mean, this is an interesting team to watch. This is a team that whenever these trades happen, there's going to be guys that are currently playing that will continue to be playing with the Thunder, maybe
mm-hmm.
not maybe starting where they were reserves before. I mean, all that sort
right.
of thing. But there are lessons being learned. And so, you know, you hope that does carry over whenever that time does come.
Yeah. And, you know, again, something could happen 10 minutes from now. But just looking back at this, like, there's not a ton, There's very, very few December trades in the NBA. Like, everyone's looking at this December 15th, like, okay, now there's no trade restrictions. Everyone can be dealt pretty much. But still, like, it's everyone waits till February 6th. Like, all the trades come the day before the deadline or the deadline. Maybe you get like two or three that don't, but, you know, it still could be a while.
Right, and that's the time that it makes the most sense to add a guy. Like, you know where you're at. You know where you're at in the standings. You know what kind of push you have to make in order to get into the playoffs. And you have a better idea for what the...
Yeah, and you can, like, capitalize on desperation, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Should we end on desperation?
Desperation.
There was some of that tonight, but the Thunder came through.
Nailed it.
Thank you.
Tied it back to the top.
Great kicker. Thank you, everybody, for joining us on the Thunder Buddies podcast. And we will see you on Wednesday after the Grizzlies game.